Shalom Aleichem. Baruchim Abayim. Welcome everyone. Be'ezrat Hashem. We'll continue our shiurim in Sefer Mishnei Torah of the Rambam. Hilchot Yesodei Torah. Torah Foundations. We're holding in the second chapter, and tonight we're going to be covering the laws Dalit, which is number 4, all the way through, I hope, I pray, through, I believe, number 8. 4 through 8. And the topic tonight, oh, I have to admit, it's one of my favorites, one I really enjoy teaching, and this is about angels. Angels. Our society is full of the mythology of angels. Whenever I go to the mall, I see those little kiosk stands in the middle of the malls, and they sell these little statuettes of these beautiful, like, little girl children in like long blue or pink robes with wings on the back, and those are angels. Or the little baby-faced angels, and they think those are cherubs and the like. People have such a fantasy about angels, whether it's Clarence from that old Hollywood movie or amongst others. There are so many different portrayals. But in order for us to truly understand, we must go beyond the mythology, the fairy tales, and the fantasy. We must also go beyond the philosophy and the theology. Ultimately, let me state here from the beginning. We are now talking about other races of entities that are alien to our planet. They might be alien to our dimension or not. All right? That depends on what race of these aliens we're talking about. For those of you who are familiar with my writings on Kosher Torah and my other series that I've done on and recorded lessons, as well as books, I've written a book on UFOs and aliens in light of Torah and Kabbalah, which is available on our koshertorah.com online store in the ebook section. I am going to be covering a review of much of that material, as well as, of course, covering Rambam's words here. Now, as I was stating, these entities are definitely alien to our world. The word that we use today to describe those entities alien to our world is extraterrestrial. They're not terrestrial, meaning of our world. They're extra, meaning they're above and beyond it. So therefore, I do use terms like aliens, extraterrestrials, and the like, because this is the most accurate term to describe these entities. A point that Rambam is going to make. We enumerate 10 different classes of these extraterrestrials. But a point made in commentaries of the Rambam, as well as in other sets of literature, there are numerous different races of these entities. And these 10 are just, if you will, general categories or classifications, each of which have 10 subdivisions, each subdivision which has subdivisions, etc., and so on. So we're ultimately acknowledging right from the start that we live in a very crowded and populated universe. What is the nature of these entities? We refer to them in Hebrew as a malach. The word malach, translated always as angel, actually means a messenger. Now, from a point of theology, we believe and state that the absolute consciousness, the ultimate mind of the universe, that which we call God, being that the entire universe is just an expression of his own thought, therefore anything and everything in the universe can be his representative, his agent, his vehicle, vessel through which he acts. And therefore anything and everything can be his messenger, whether it be the wind, the water, the earth and under the ground, slip on a banana peel, if you will, God forbid, right? We could say that God ordained the banana peel be there, and therefore it served His purpose to get you to slip, maybe to bump your behind and knock some sense into you or whatever. Everything, therefore, philosophically or theologically speaking, is God's messenger. Therefore, what is the purpose and nature of these aliens, these extraterrestrials? And let me just say here from the beginning, I'm not talking about little gray, bulbous-headed beings with big black eyes and no noses who supposedly jump around in flying saucers. Interestingly, in our Kabbalistic tradition, we do have a reference of who they are. And no, they don't come from outer space. They come from a completely different place. A place which is enumerated in the Holy Zohar. And even many people who supposedly are on the in of the government conspiracy to keep quiet the existence of these extraterrestrials, whether that's true or false, allegedly, those who are on the in, who know this to be true, claim that these grays do not come from outer space, reticuli, or any place else, but someplace much closer to home. But that's them. So, what are these entities? Well, before I even read the Rambam, I want to preface his words by letting you know that if one reads the numerous commentaries on the Rambam, especially those which express a Kabbalistic point of view, you will find that Rambam's opinions on these matters is not considered as definitive halakha. Or in other words, what Rambam's words here are not accepted as the final word on the matter. He expresses his opinion, and I am certain that his opinion has validity from a certain point of view, if you will. Because Rambam speaks of these entities as they interact with us. Now, with that introduction, let me read to you Halacha Dalet and what he says. What is it that the prophets say when they say, Shira'u malach ish ubal kanapayim? When they see an angel who's as like a made up of fire and has wings. He states here, Rambam does, Hakol b'mar'eh nevuah v'derech chida. All of this is in a prophetic vision, and if you will, a parable, a hint, what we would today call an archetypal representation. And he continues and says, Lomar, to say, she'eno guf, that they have no physical form, no body, ve'eno kaved kekufot ha'kavedim, and no heaviness, that's the correct word to describe the word kaved, like the heavy bodies, meaning like us. Komo shne emar, and he quotes here pasuk, ki Hashem elokecha esh ochlahu, that the Lord our God is a devouring fire. But he's not really fire, it's only said that as a metaphor. As it says, Osei malachav ruchot, that he makes his angels like the winds. He then continues and states in halacha hey, v'mai paradua tzorot zo mezo. So if they have no physical form, how do we separate one from the other? And he says, how is eno gufin? They have no gufin. He continues here, says, lefi she'inan shavim b'metziutan, ela kol ahad mehen, lamata b'ma'alato shel chavero. They have no real sense of place, if you will. They're not equal in their reality. Rather, each one has a higher and lower position. And that is how they are. That one is present within the context of, if you will, being above and below the other. And everything, of course, comes from God and His goodness. And this is what he quotes here, Shlomo HaMelech, in his wisdom, who said, Ki gavah ma'al gavah shamar. Because above the one who is high, there is a watcher, in other words, a higher one than them. Words from Ecclesiastes, Kohelet, the fifth parak. Rambam's position pretty simply stated is, angels, these entities, all of them apparently, have absolutely no corporeal form or construct to them whatsoever. They are not made up of the elements as we are, what we refer to as fire, air, water, and earth, meaning energy, gaseous, liquid, or solid states. He refers to them by an old traditional Greek term as a sechel nivdal, a separate, or if you will, unique intelligence that has no finite form whatsoever. Now, there are those who strongly disagree with the Rambam on this and say angels, or at least some of them, indeed have a physical form. Physical not as our bodies are. Our bodies, again, are made up of, as we say, fire, air, water, and earth, meaning, again, energy, gaseous, liquid, and solid states. And there are those who are of the opinion that there are angels, not all of them, but some, whose physical bodies are made up of what we call fire and air, or if you will, energy bodies and gaseous bodies. So therefore, according to those who are of that opinion, if they were to ask the question that Rambam did here in the fourth halakha, when the prophets said that they saw an angel of fire, Rambam says it's a symbol. It's an archetype. It's a completely psychological, symbolic experience. The other Mekubalim said, no, it's not. These entities are actually made up of bodies of light, and they appear as they are. Now, which one is right, which one is wrong? In my opinion, it all depends exactly about what you're talking about. All right? This is important to understand. Rambam writes here in the sixth halakha, when Rambam wants to refer to the distinction in angels having one above the other in degree, he says, he's not talking about place. And I might add, the Mekubalim definitively disagree with him on this. Rabbi Yaakov of Emden, the famous Yavet specifically, has written about this and says, Rambam, no, these entities are actually physical to a point and have a concept of place, contradicting here Rambam. Okay? So, he says, Komo Shomrim Beshne Hachamim Shehara, just Rambam here is explaining, he says, just like angels are above one another, just like sages are above one another, not necessarily physically, but within that context. Now, I sped through these because I wanted to get to the seventh halakha, wherein which Rambam enumerates now 10 different races of these species of angels, their names of which are known to us from numerous Torah sources. He states here the highest level of them are called the Hayot, that we know, of course, from Ezekiel's vision. He says that's the highest level. Everybody disagrees with him on that. There are other groups of angels called Ofanim, and then Erelim, Chashmalim, Seraphim, Malachim, Elohim, Bnei Elohim, Kirovim, and then again, Ishim. There are really no translations for these names. It's not really what's important here. But what is important is how the Mekubalim specifically discuss and enumerate this material. Now I'm going to bring into you some really interesting and some wild stuff that I pray you'll appreciate. Start off, as I've said from the beginning, the existence of these races of entities is not subject to our philosophical contemplations. For example, if you and I are going to sit here and discuss, I wonder what life is like today in Beijing, China. I wonder if the people there have two arms and legs like we do. I wonder if they have heard of such concepts of electricity, automobiles, and televisions. Now, you and I could sit and argue and discuss and debate and say, well, judging from our knowledge and our experience, judging from what we see and what we know, and our conclusions of such a discussion is going to be based upon our abstract information. But of course, with a discussion of Beijing, China, if we want to know what's going on, we can easily take an airplane and go over there and see for ourselves and have experience. But yet, when it comes to these extraterrestrial entities, how many really have experience? Bottom line, how many talk to these entities? How many have real experience? Of the great and holy rabbis and sages, today, maybe only a handful conduct such communications. Therefore, all the rest who want to pontificate and yell and scream, this is what a Moloch is! I sit and chuckle. I said, oh, really? And how do you know? Oh, because it says so in the book. Yeah, well, maybe the Moloch hasn't read the book. And maybe his race of beings who have been around possibly for how we judge time millions and millions of years before our race even came to Earth, they might see things a wee bit differently than how you wish to philosophically interpret the existence of their race. And might not take kindly to the way you might interpret it. I have actually spoken with people in Jerusalem, so-called Mikubalim, philosophers, people who don't have experience, people who don't meditate, but who want to sit and study. Now I'm speaking specifically of one American Mikubal who I know, I've known for many, many years. And he went and started talking and talking about, well, this is what this book says about angels and that book says. I said, yeah, but when was the last time you ever spoke to an angel? Oh, you can't do that. You're not Kadosh enough. I said, nothing to do with Kiddushah. Nothing to do at all. You want to talk to an angel? Learn the language. Communicate. Oh, no, Chas V'Shalom, blah, blah. And it goes on, and I said, so I said, you know nothing. You've never had an experience. You are completely ignorant. And what you're saying is completely wrong. And then he stopped. How do I know? I said, because if I have a question about angels, I'll ask one. And I know the language to communicate. Would you like to learn? Oh, no, Chas V'Shalom, and on. I said, oh, shut up. You know nothing. You're not, I have to be disrespectful simply because you are communicating information which is wrong and incorrect, and you are misleading people. You're misleading people is a dangerous crime in violation of Torah law. We call you a deceiver because you are disconnecting people from a great and holy connection that they're ultimately supposed to have. Am I saying that people are supposed to talk with the angels? Yeah. Our sages did. All the Hachamim did. Through the ages, through the centuries. Anybody and everybody can have access for those who wish. But now, when I speak of angels, what am I speaking about? Hayot? Ofanim? Erelim? Hashmalim? Which ones are which? Well, Rabbi Chaim Vital, the name of Maran HaArizal, enumerates three of these categories. Specifically, the Seraphim, the Chayot, and the Ofanim. He chooses these three as pretty much generic types because we have a three-dimensional reality according to our understanding of things in the world we live. We have the physical world, we have what we call an astral world, and then a world of a higher dimension which we call the realm of mind thought. These are the three dimensions spoken of Kabbalistically as Birya, Yetzira, and Asiya. And that as such, the absolute mind of the universe, the primordial existence, God, has races of entities who have been around for, how we judge time, millions of years, who serve as his agents in, at least what we know, being our shepherds, guiding and directing life on our planet. And that literally, they are our shepherds, and as if we're the sheep in their flock, with God, of course, being the great shepherd. You can only imagine where this concept goes. That all Earth is like an experiment, and all of us are just like in the little maze running around, and we're being corralled and watched, all for the sake of our growth, education, and development. I have written on numerous occasions using titles such as "We Are Not Alone" or "We Are Being Watched." And it's absolutely true. Not that anyone should be paranoid or fearful, but nonetheless, life at this time in this place is very precious. It's a sacred gift. Our souls come to take on these bodies to learn, to grow, to be educated, to mature. And we have our teachers who guide us. This is clearly stated in the book of Daniel, where it states it's by the ordination of the Irin, which is another word for the watcher angels, sometimes referred to as the Ishim and sometimes as the Bnei Elohim. All things are ordained by their hands because God has placed them, if you will, kind of like in charge. We find numerous stories throughout the Gemara of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu placed our world under the dominion and control of a parliament, a government of 70 specific shepherds, and we call them the Sanhedrin in Shemayim. And their job is to deal with things. Now, what is the nature of these angels? Rab Chaim, I said, enumerated the three general categories of Seraphim, Chayot, and Ofanim. Seraphim, he correlates to that realm domain called Biryah, which is the realm of mind, completely outside of space and time as we understand it. And they have no corporeal form that we would understand. There are angels in that dimensional plane called Yetzirah. Yetzirah is that underlying energy dimension, which gives rise to our physical dimension. And the entities which are indigenous there, Yetziratic entities, we always call Chayot. And who knows how many other races exist in that parallel dimension. But yet here in our physical world, this world, we have the race called the Ofanim. The Ofanim, if you will, are kind of like the form of body to the Chayot, which are the form of body to the Seraphim. And these are three general categories of types of races and entities, of which there might be a million each. And one channels into the other, it channels into the other. It's, if you will, what I call the spiritual or heavenly chain of command. Just like I and you, we all have a soul, and the soul is in the body. So the Seraph is in the Chayah, which is in the Ofan. And we find that that type of thinking is clearly spoken of by the prophet Ezekiel when he speaks of the relationship between the Ofan angels and the Chayot angels, as one moving as the other moves. Now, the Bnei Elohim, we have a reference to in the Bible. Book of Job speaks of the Bnei Elohim, the sons of God, coming and having counsel with God, and that all of them, apparently even including the Satan, who's apparently one of them, comes in, talks to God, and they sit and they debate. This is the meeting of that council of that Sanhedrin that I mentioned to you earlier. And now, there's another biblical reference to them in the book of Genesis, wherein it states that the sons of God came down and took the daughters of men. Some want to interpret this as an intermingling between the sons of Cain and the sons of Seth, or daughters of Seth, as the case may be. But in the most ancient sources, Kabbalistic and otherwise, these were said to be of the watcher angels, the Irin, the Bnei Elohim, who came down to earth and took physical women. Now, that is such a curious type of a statement. My gosh, angels come down from heaven? Where did we ever hear something like that before? How many of us remember the tales of mythologies that we had learned in our youth? The Greek mythologies of Olympus, the Norse mythologies of Asgard, wherein which the gods always came down to earth and took human wives. Zeus took a human wife and gave birth to Hercules. Go look into Greek tradition, and you'll find that Heracles, his original name, apparently was considered to have been a historical character. And it's even said that Heracles was married, get this, to one of the granddaughters of Avraham Avinu. That's right. You can read about that in old Greek literature. I believe Rabbi Menashe ben Israel writes about things like that. Very strange old legends about the relationships of in ancient times. But now, Rambam, as I just mentioned to you, enumerates these as being completely non-corporeal. And as I said here, indeed, Mikubalim disagree with him. I have here open in front of me a relatively recent commentary on the Rambam. It's called the Rambam HaMa'ir. And on page Sadi Chet, on this Perek Bet, this seventh halakha, the rabbi brings down in the name of a rabbi Shem Tov ben Shem Tov, who argues in the name of all of the Mekubalim, that indeed these angels have a form of physicality in a body, which he says here is Dak Vizach, Shelo HaRambam, not like what the Rambam states at all. Again, in Sefer Ohel Moed, of which I teach a class, the rabbi states there that these angels have bodies, as I said earlier, of fire and air, meaning forms of energy, and somehow gaseous forms. And that would explain the literalness of the words of the prophets who describe seeing entities of fire. But now, let's thicken the pot a little. Let's get really interesting. Back to Genesis, when the sons of God came down to the daughters of men. Who were they? What were they? Were they non-corporeal entities that came and took corporeal form and got stuck here? I've always had a problem with that, and I'll tell you why. This is how I interpret the relationship of corporeality and non-corporeality. I always interpret it within the context of virtual reality, within the context of a computer program. If I exist in what we'll call the real world, and I put on a virtual reality suit, and I enter into the computer game and the computer world, and even one that's very well developed of AI, artificial intelligence, nonetheless, as an outsider, I recognize that I'm in a computer program and that it is not real, and that at any moment I can take off my helmet and poof, I'm back in the real world. Is anyone suggesting then that I would fall in love with a woman in the computer, a construct, and develop a relationship with this construct and want to stay there, and therefore I'm going to stay in the virtual world, live out the rest of my life in the computer so I could be with my computerized babe? Couldn't I just like rewrite the program? I mean, there would be no concept of reality to this. Another thing, if we were to think that these angelic entities are so above us spiritually that they would look at us as we would look at monkeys. When was the last time anybody ever went to the zoo, saw a female chimp or a baboon and said, "Oh, hubba hubba, that's my baby, right? I think I want to become a monkey and so I could be with Miss Chimp here." You know, the sound of such things sounds ridiculously foolish. So therefore, what's going on? How could these angels have actually come down to earth? Now I want to share with you something that I found that in my research for my book, UFOs and Aliens in Light of the Torah and Kabbalah. Many, many years ago, I had read an article in The Forward, which is a English secular Jewish newspaper. And they were talking about some discovery of possibility of microbes from outer space. They asked a number of rabbis what they thought about life in outer space. One of the rabbis they asked was a local Chicago rabbi who was the great Gaon, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, the brother of Rabbi Dov Ber, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva University. Rabbi Aaron was a gadol ador in his own right. And he said something in the newspaper article which really struck me queer. He stated that the sons of God in Genesis 6 who came down were actually humanoid extraterrestrials. That they were the B'nai Elohim. They were the Ishim angels, and they were human beings like us. And they came down in physical flesh and took wives. And he read that in a book that he had from the 9th century in the name of some Rabbi Yehuda. When I read that in the newspaper, I shook my head no, and I said, no. Could that be that a Gadol Ador would believe such a thing, say such a thing, all the more so in such a secular newspaper? Now, in those days, I lived in Chicago. In those days, I was actually a rabbi in the Bris Yeshiva. I saw Rabbi Aharon every day. And I was on very good terms with both his sons, Rabbi Eliyahu and Reb Moshe. So, I took Reb Moshe aside. And I said to him, you know, I read this article in the Jewish Forward. And this is how they quoted your father. I mean, do you want to possibly respond to them to let them know that your father doesn't believe like that? Like, this is what I would thought would have been the right way to approach it. And Reb Moshe said, oh no, my father's quoted accurately and true. It's exactly what he says. He's got the book, and Reb Moshe said he saw it. Wow. Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, not known as a Kabbalist or the mystical school, is stating clearly that these B'nai Elohim, these Ishim, these watchers, are somehow physical just like you and me. That's frightening. But it would give insight to how someone like a Zeus or an Odin can come down and take a human wife. It really makes us have to redefine the entire concept of what an angel is. But what kind of angel? We're not talking about baryatic angels who exist in a dimensional plane far above our own. We're not even talking about yetziratic angels who exist in a parallel energy plane in those bodies of fire. We're talking in our physical world. And indeed, they might have a higher, more refined physical form. But yet a physical form it is. That is how Rabbi Aharon interpreted the B'nai Elohim in Genesis. And I have to extrapolate B'nai Elohim or B'nai Elohim. It's not like you have the B'nai Elohim in Genesis and other B'nai Elohim mentioned in Job that are one and the same. Who are they? What are they? When I researched my book on UFOs and aliens in light of Torah, I came across numerous ideas and concepts in the UFO world. Some of which claimed that the members or entities coming from the UFOs are human beings, just like us. We have seen numerous Hollywood movies which represent that. From the original Day the Earth Stood Still with Michael Rene from the early 1950s, to others, some of which were more humorous. The sci-fi UFO alien movies were actually, in my opinion, rather hilarious. They had this one which I considered so comedic, called The Devil Woman from Mars. Flying saucer lands this really attractive, sexy-looking woman dressed seductively, comes off the ship and lands in this town, says, I've come to gather human men. We had the ultimate war of sexes on our planet Mars, and we killed off all the men, and we're coming here to take home all you human men. And, of course, in the 50s, that was considered a terrible and horrible thing. And I sat and chuckled and laughed and says, gosh, if they ever made that movie in the 90s or, you know, now, you'd have the men lining up, you know, around the block to get on the flying saucer. I said, take me, take me. And, you know, that's why I said, this is hilarious, this is funny, this is not serious. But yet there are people who have written serious books who claim that they have met extraterrestrials who look just like us. I had one book from some guy in Europe, and forgive me that I don't remember the title or the name, but I do quote it in my e-book, UFOs and Aliens in Light of Kabbalah Torah. And he states he was contacted by a race of beings. They were all blonde-haired and blue-eyed. And he has this picture of this alien from, I think he said from the Pleiades, who was this blonde-haired, blue-eyed gal. Gosh, she could have been a model on the cover of any one of the magazines. And I said, gee, if that's what the aliens look like, not bad. How serious is this? We don't know. Because one of the things that we do know about certain other entities which we call Shindalots. I cover this in my Angels and Demons series, which I have available in CD and MP3 on koshertorah.com, and I strongly advise people to listen to those lessons for more information about this. There are a race of entities which are shapeshifters, which do not exist in physical form, but we said have an energy body, and somehow can cloak themselves in physicality at will, and come into and out of physicality. Possibly it's some form of virtual reality for them. I don't sit down with these entities and ask them, you know, what is the biology and the mechanics of their nature and how they go about doing things. That's not the type of a conversation these entities are willing to have with us. I wrote a book a number of years ago, again, also available on our koshertorah.com online store in the ebook section, on angels and humanity, where I've enumerated a number of these points. And I emphasize there that these entities, their job is to, as I said, watch us, like the book of Daniel says. Now, if you are a shepherd and your job is to corral the sheep, something would tell me normally that the sheep and the shepherds usually don't hang out together and talk as equals. If a sheep went up to a group of shepherds at the end of the day and said, "Baa, baa, can I come and sit with you?" What do you think the shepherd would say? Number one, he probably wouldn't understand the language of a sheep. Number two, he'd take a shepherd's staff and say, go back to the sheep. Go back out to the field there. Go graze on the grass or whatever. And leave us shepherds to do our stuff. That's pretty much how these angels, these watchers, these B'nai Elohim, these Ishim, look at us. Now, the relationship of Ishim to B'nai Elohim is also known by Rabbi Chaim Vital. Of interest in his Zoharic commentary, the Or HaChama, he quotes a relationship between these Ishim and B'nai Elohim that he takes from what he states there, the Book of Enoch, found in the hands of the non-Jews. Because this is what we today call First Enoch. In his day, the old Aramaic origins were not known. They only had it in like old Coptic or something like that. Since his day, of course, in modern times, with the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls, we have found the original Aramaic versions. And this has become the foundation source of many of the teachings we have of these types of entities. The interactions humanity has had with them, for good or for bad. It is important, then, that we understand a point that I make over and over again. We are not alone in our universe. Whether we're talking about watchers, Ofanim, or whether we're talking about B'nai Elohim, whether we're talking about those entities that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik references, or those made reference here by Rabbi Shem Tov Ben Shem Tov, we are talking about entities that definitely interact with us. And an interaction, by definition, is a two-way street. Not only do they interact with us, but we can interact with them. Now I'm going to share with you a very deep secret. There is a race of entities. They exist in a parallel space. I don't know how better to describe it. They're physical like we are. They're indigenous to this earth, but they've lived here before we have. They were originally of a reptilian order, but they themselves has, if you will, expanded, grown, evolved, and gone beyond. They're from what we call the previous sabbatical cycles, the pre-Adamic civilizations. Those kings who reigned in the land of Edom prior to there being a king in Israel. According to the Ari, that's completely spiritual, but according to others, that's completely physical. And one of the races of these entities, a reptilian order, evolved, expanded, and ascended beyond. And it is they who became the watchers. They who became the Ofanim. They are known by their language in the Sefer Yetzirah as the Tili, which actually means the dragons, the reptilians. They are the ancient dragons of old. And it is one of their number who took the form of the serpent in the Garden of Eden, deceived Adam, Eve. That was a trusted race, a trusted form. If you will remember, our sages say that the serpent in the Garden of Eden wasn't like a snake of today. It had arms and legs and it spoke. It was a humanoid reptilian. Yes, Torah, and only the Chinese, with the possible exception of the Mesoamericans, are the only ones who have a recollection of the dragons as being good before they were collectively condemned as being bad. But what does the Sefer Yetzirah say about these, Tilly? The language in the sixth chapter is rather revelatory. The Tilly rule in the universe as a king rules upon his throne. And it is indicative that these Tilly are the watchers, are the Irin spoken of in Daniel, who are the ones who ordain things to be. They are the ones who are this heavenly Sanhedrin. And therefore it is curious, are these the ones who would be attracted to human females? I should say not. Absolutely, positively, not. And therefore it opens up that these B'nai Elohim then, who are they? Apparently they are different races from different times in the history of pre-Adamic Earth. And their relationship to us is as an older brother to a younger child, all in the service of our Heavenly Father. Now, I have taken you completely outside the Rambam's explanation here. Because the Rambam says, oh, this is all symbolic, there are just different levels of entities and consciousness. And if we're talking about how these entities would enter our universe as if we would enter a virtual reality, then I guess what the Rambam says is absolutely true. Because think of this. If I want to travel from one planet to another, I can build myself an intergalactic ship and, of course, equip it with my own atmosphere, all my own physical needs, and transport my physical body from planet Earth to wherever I want to go, whether it's Alpha Centauri, another star system, another galaxy. And I would be subject to the laws of space in how I would be able to move. I do believe that science has shown that there is a faster than light travel, call it maybe warp speed or wormhole travel or whatever. But that method of classical traditional space travel, the likes of which we see fictionalized in Star Trek, Star Wars and the like, is a rather cumbersome and expensive form of transportation. And especially since many different worlds are completely alien and hostile to our form of life. Our physical forms, our bodies, are indigenous to our planet. We require the atmosphere of this planet to breathe in order to live for anything more than 2 or 3 minutes. We require the warmth, the appropriate balance of solar rays, and numerous different things to maintain physical life. But yet there's another part to us. That which we call our minds, our souls, our neshama, that is our true essence. Now, our true essence cloaks our physical body as we would put on a garment of clothing. And if that is the case, why could not our neshama, soul, mind, take ourselves out of this physical body and put us into any other form or body which might be conducive to us according to our needs? This is exactly what the Mikubalim and the Holy Nevi'im have always done. This is the secret of the ascent before the Merkava. The prophet would take off the garment of his physical body and clothe himself in a form, a body, indigenous to the domain and realm and dimension to which he was traveling. And he would travel at the speed of mind. His mind would detach from his body and take on a second body, created similar to the construct and forms outlining of creating the body of a golem in the Sefer Yetzirah, and then inhabit or visit that domain for whatever period of time necessary. This is how Moshe Rabbeinu, as we said, ascended to heaven. This is how many of the great sages ascended to the Pardes. This type of body transference and travel by mind is very common, commonly known within the Kabbalistic Torah tradition. How many can do it? I guess only those who are trained to do it. So let's go back. I want to travel now to Mars, Jupiter. Heck, let's say for argument's sake that there are actually entities living on the face of the sun. It's 10,000 degrees there. Something tells me they're not made out of flesh and blood like us. Maybe they're just balls of light. So I want to go and visit my newfound friend who just happens to be a citizen of the sun. It's 10,000 degrees up there. What can I do? Obviously, I'm going to detach myself from my physical body that's here on Earth, travel and transport there instantaneously through space and time through the power of mind, and therefore congeal my consciousness into a form indigenous to that world and domain. And when I am ready to leave, I do. My body there is as physical for that domain as long as I am inhabiting it. But the minute I detach my consciousness from it, the body, if you will, dissipates and disappears. Not only is this the way we travel from planet A to planet B, that's how these entities travel to our Earth, which is as foreign and alien to them as their planets would be to us. So we have numerous biblical examples of entities coming down to Earth, taking on physical form, like the three who visited Abraham Avinu, and then went on to Sodom and Amorah. They even appeared to be eating. Some of our sages say they didn't really eat, they only had the appearance of eating. Rambam is of the opinion that this never really happened physically, it was all a dream vision of Abraham. But others say, no, they were really physically there, and they physically ate, and then they moved on. We read later, when the angel came to appear to Manoah, who's the father of Shimshon, Samson, they saw him and chatted with him, and they thought he was a regular, normal guy like you or me, and all of a sudden, he ascends to heaven in a puff of smoke, maybe beaming up Star Trek style, transcending this physical body that he inhabited. So therefore, do we extrapolate and state that they have no physical form whatsoever? Rambam is stating this because this was the traditional classical way of understanding many of these entities known in Greek tradition. But yet in the Greek tradition, as much as they knew of these entities, they always referred to them as daemons, where it's where we get the name demons. They never applied such non-corporality to the gods, where they always believed had some type of physicality, judging from all their myths and legends. So way back when, even, they knew what. Now, let's continue. Rambam enumerates more about the Hayot. He speaks about this lowest level called the Ishim. He states that they are the ones who communicated with the prophets and received by them a prophetic vision, where again, others would state that they took on physical form and they actually had some type of construct. And he says they're called Ishim, which really means men, because their level is close to human knowledge. Now, if you're a watcher, a big brother, a shepherd, needless to say, you're going to have some type of relationship to what you're dealing with. Doesn't mean that the shepherd himself is an evolved sheep. No, they're totally different. I would assume then the watchers, as referred to as in Daniel, are different. But yet, read in Daniel when he makes a reference to Michael, Gabriel, the angel of Paras, the angel of Persia.
He refers to them not as these holy, sublime, super guys. He doesn't refer to them like seraphim angels as does Isaiah. He doesn't refer to them as chayot with multiple faces and wings, something as extraterrestrial and frightening as you can possibly conceive of as Ezekiel does. On the contrary, he refers to these as the ish, the man, Gabriel, right? Yosef, in our Torah story, was wandering around in the woods, wherever he was, looking for his brothers. And it says a man found him. And our sages say that man was the angel Gabriel, in the form of a man. Was this a virtual reality form? Possible. Was it a form like Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik stated, like the B'nai Elohim of Genesis 6? Also possible. Which one? Well, I guess if you ever meet Gabriel, you can ask him, and maybe he'll tell you. I'm sorry if it sounds so flippant, but I want to emphasize the reality of these entities, and to dismiss the mythology that you should just think that we can talk about them and extrapolate and make up whatever we want. Rambam's point here is not for us to make contact. Remember, this is a book of law, not a book of meditation. He is enumerating the existences of these entities for one specific point, that we should know that they are there, that we should realize that we are not alone in the universe, that our universe is a great, populated, profound, grandiose, and large place, and that we should be in awe of it. And in that, recognize our lowly, humble place in it, and therefore submit and surrender ourselves to the ultimate source, the creator of all these angelic races, same as the creator of us. And our surrender, of course, to the primordial existence, the universal consciousness, the Holy One, blessed be He, God. See, that is the ultimate goal here. This is why Rambam enumerates this material. And at the end of the chapter, which we will discuss at the end of next class, he states the reason why he discusses this is so that we would have the awe of God, the Yirat Shamayim that we introduced and spoke about last week. The reason why I enumerate these things to you is not so that you can contemplate and wonder who's who and what's what. Who cares? I guess when they knock on your door and you come and you talk to them, you care then. If they never come and knock in, then don't worry about it. But the fact that you should contemplate and recognize, wow, how profound, how deep is the truth of our universe. Now, I will extrapolate this. A point about conspiracy theories. If you look back to the old books of Enoch, what led to the destruction of mankind in the flood? It said that all flesh had become corrupted. Apparently, these B'nai Elohim who came to earth infected the gene pool and polluted the pure human gene with their alien connection. Noah was the only one who was pure, and therefore God allowed whatever disasters to occur to wipe out the contaminated seed. But prior to that happening, when these angels came, the books of Enoch and other literature state that they came and gave gifts to mankind. And if you read and enumerate the lists of these gifts, they were gifts of knowledge and information. By modern definition, we would say they were gifts of technology. And I have to admit, I tremble a wee bit when I read modern-day conspiracy theories that state that these aliens have made contact with the governments of the world and give them technologies and trade for God only knows what. I scratched my head and said, is it possible? Is it possible that I'm hearing the same thing that happened in the days before the flood? Wow. That's a really freaky coincidence. And I'm really not one to believe in coincidence. No, We have no official verification of the existence of extraterrestrials. And of course, we have numerous conjecture. It's in all of our public media, our literature. But I have personally spoken to those who supposedly are in the know, who claim that truly we do have such contacts, meaning the governments do. But who do they have contacts with? With what? What are they getting? Well, apparently, it might be with some of those races which might not have had the greatest reputation from days past. And it might behoove the governments to keep those identities appropriately concealed. There's a classical science fiction novel written by Arthur C. Clarke, the author of 2001: A Space Odyssey. It's one of his first novels. It's called Childhood's End. Brilliant book, worth reading. In it, the aliens come down to Earth. Okay, big flying saucers to cover all the cities, kind of like in the movie Independence Day. But rather than blow us all up, they just sit there. They hang out. They don't do anything. They just hang out there for days, weeks, months, I think it was. And people wanted to, you know, send nuclear bombs to blow up the ship. The bombs go up and literally just disappear. Aliens don't reprise. They don't fight back. Nothing. They're just so totally detached. Finally, they send out a message saying we want a representative. And the guy meets them from the United Nations. And this is the only guy that they talk to for like a period of 50 years. And they never reveal their identity. They never show people what we look like. They said, it's not time yet. You guys would freak out. Finally, after these entities are here for 50 years, they help direct human man, you know, human civilization to make peace and all the rest. Finally, they reveal themselves. And what do they look like? Ah! 10 foot tall, red skin, big horns in their forehead, wings and a pointed tail. You know, the traditional image of the devil. Arthur C. Clarke has a reason for choosing that image. And it wasn't because they were bad. Actually, they were good. How could the good guys have that appearance? I'll let you read the novel to find out the rest. But it might not be so far from the truth. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So, I want to return now to Rambam, because he says here something, just to conclude, in 8th Halakha. Kol Atzorot Ha'elu, all these images, spiritual forms, we know might be just more than that. He says, Elu Chayim, they're all alive, Umakirim et Borei, and they all know the Creator. V'yodim Oto De'agadola, and they all have great knowledge, Ad Me'od, great immense knowledge about Him. Meaning, they're very spiritual connected entities. And they could teach us a lot of spiritual lessons if only we would listen to our big brothers. We don't pray to them. We certainly don't worship them. That is idolatry. They are our big brothers. Big brothers together with little brothers approach the Father. But they are not the Father. Kol tzura v'tzura lefi ma'alata, lo lefi gadla. Alright? Each and every form has its own level, but not in greatness. So they have, if you will, their ways and means of being closer to God. Our sages say in ancient literature that these angels, there were those who were created on the second day of creation and the fifth day of creation. Now, being that the days of creation are metaphors, and as the likes of Gerald Schrodinger in his books, he's that MIT physicist who's also learned in the Kabbalah, I believe his book was called Genesis and the Big Bang, has been able to show, as well as many other rabbis and other books, there's no contradiction between the world being 16 billion years old, if you will, and created in 6 days. It actually works well together. Rabbi Yitzchak Dimenako, one of the great Mekubalim of the olden days, was actually able to extrapolate from Kabbalistic teachings a formula to show that the world indeed is, by our definition, about 16 billion years old. Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, in his book The Age of the Universe, translates this material from Rabbi Yitzchak of Akko, and it's well worth reading to recognize that this is a valid Torah teachings, not like some of the fundamentalist extremists today who want to interpret the Bible literally, so contradictory to everything that Torah stands for. And if that's the case, then day two of creation, or even day five of creation, was thousands and thousands and millions of years old. So these older races of angels, which were created on day two, they might have been around for 1 billion years. Now, maybe they are no different from an intelligent, artificial, intelligent computer program. No chance of evolution, change, or growth. That would explain to us the teachings of our sages, where it says angels have no free will. Now, of course, they have a choice. They could do what they want. That's how angels fall. But free will means they don't have the ability to evolve beyond their present state. They are who they are, who they are. We human beings, of course, have a much greater and higher potential. So because our potential is greater, from the side of our potential, we are greater than the angels. But from the side of our physicality at present, we are, again, much lower. So, Rambam just concludes here this 8th halakha. We're running out of time. I have to speed through this. He says, even the highest level is unable to conceive of the true nature of the Creator. Right? Even the highest. All right. Afilu malat rishona. Even the highest of all the levels. Ini yechole lasig amitata borei. None of the angels have a true connection, absolute relationship with God. None. This is the secret of why the angels spoke and said, Ayemim kom kivodo laritzo. Where is the place of God's glory that we may worship Him? We say this in our Kiddushah prayer, in our Amidah. The angels receive their marching orders, if you will, from what's metaphorically called behind the veil, meaning they have some type of psychic connection, wherein which that which is above them, if you remember quoting the verse from Kohelet, tells them this is what you do. The seraphim and those entities of that level receive it from the higher absolutic realm. They pass it on to those in the Yetzirahic realm who pass it on to the Asiatic realm. It says, Eladata Ketzara Lasig Uleda. Right? They too have a limited intellectual capacity to know. Aval nonetheless, each level knows greater than that level which is beneath them. And of course, this is true of us. So this is true regarding each and every level, including the 10th level. That level, he says, also knows the Creator in a manner that surpasses the potential to know and comprehend God possessed by us human beings, made up of a body and soul. But none of these levels can know the Creator, as of course God knows Himself. And what is the nature of knowledge? What is the nature of awareness itself? That is going to be our next lesson and the conclusion of this second chapter, dealing with these concepts, which Rambam himself is going to call Maaseh Merkava, the great ascent and study of the Holy Chariot. So on this note, Be'ezrat Hashem, let us conclude tonight this lecture. Baruch Adonai Lo'olam. Amen.